The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio.
Today with our show, Healing with Dr. Daniels. I'd like to remind our listeners that you can call in at 914-338-0695. Again, that number is 914-338-0695. First, I want to recap the theme of this show, which is the competent practice of medicine according to the standard of care is the leading cause of death in America. Healing with Dr. Daniels is the place where you can get honest answers that can save your life. This is a place to get healing news you can use without any technical mumbo-jumbo. First, you're listening to the Blake Radio Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk for murder by medicine. Also, reminder, if you have any questions, please call in at 914-338-0695. Today's topic is medical homicide by suicide. Dr. Daniels, can you explain the medical definition of suicide, please?
Certainly. Suicide is the intentional self-inflicted harm that leads to death. And that's a really important thing. It has to lead to death. If it doesn't lead to death, then it's not suicide. It's attempted suicide or whatever. There's actually a term for suicide called completed suicide. It means a patient successfully completed their suicide attempt and actually commit suicide.
Thank you. Now, how can this be caused by homicide?
Well, suicide is the intentional self-inflicted harm. Homicide is intentional harm caused by others. And so a second party can either give a person a medication that can cause them to commit suicide or other ways induce them to take action that will result in their death. And so that would be called homicide by suicide because the actual act initiating the suicide was the act of another party, a second party.
Okay. So what causes suicide?
Well, you know, there's a lot of causes to suicide, but believe it or not, the number one cause is drugs and drug use. Now, in medical school, we were taught that depression caused suicide. And a recent study by the Mayo Clinic indicates that the risk of a depressed person dying of suicide is 2%. And it's tough to evaluate this as big or small until you look at the overall frequency of suicide in a non-depressed population. Among just the population as a whole, the chances of a non-depressed person in the general population committing suicide is 1.5%. So this means that for every 100 suicide deaths in depressed people, only 25 can be attributed to their depression. In other words, the first 75 deaths are the expected level of deaths from suicide a non-depressed person would have. So there's only 25 additional deaths per 100 suicides. Those 25 deaths are caused by the depression itself. So drugs are a cause, and the drugs that we were taught in medical school caused suicide were alcohol and illegal drugs.
That's very interesting. And for those that have just joined us, you're listening to the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find your risk of murder by medicine. Also, if you have any questions, please call 914-338-0695. And the title of today's show is Medical Homicide by Suicide. Sorry about that. Now, Dr. Daniels, are there any trends in suicide?
Yes, there's a very striking trend in suicide. If we start looking at 1999, less than 1% of all deaths were suicide, specifically about 0.75%. And over the next 8 years, that rose to 1%. So by 2007, 1% of all deaths were suicide. But in the next 3 years, that jumped by 50%. And so in a three-year period from 2007 to 2010, the frequency of suicide increased by 50%. Now, that's really shocking. And it took 8 years to increase only 25%. And so the rate of increase in suicide is accelerating. So now it's an acceleration, not just a linear increase. And this is really not a good trend. It's a definite upward trend. And so from 1981 to the year 2000, suicide literally tripled for the 15 to 24-year-old age group.
Wow, that's pretty terrible. Troubling, too.
Yes, something else happened during that same time period from 1981 to 2000. Increased marketing of ADHD drugs and antidepressants for, I guess the term would be whatever. You know, people are now taking antidepressants for social anxiety disorder, for just stress, for all kinds of things. And so that's been a trend in suicide. Or social practices, I should say, that correlates or follows this trend in the tripling of suicides.
Now, is it possible to predict suicides and predict them?
That's a really interesting question. Turns out that 67% of all successful suicides are first attempts. So using past attempts as a predictor is actually not helpful. In fact, having a past attempt is almost a negative predictor because 67% succeed on their first try. So if someone's had a history of suicide attempt, all you can guess is they might attempt again, but it doesn't predict their abilities to succeed. And risk factor assessment studies have also shown that risk factors are very poor at predicting suicide. So all the experts got together and made a list, is a long list, about 180 indicators they felt of whether or not a person would commit suicide. And they got to handpick these indicators based on surveys and population analysis and everything. And despite this, we let the experts pick what criteria they wanted to use. In one study, there were 36 suicides in the high-risk group and 37 suicides in the low-risk group. And another study showed that 30% of those predicted to commit suicide did not, and 44% of those predicted not to commit suicide actually did. So this means that suicide is actually not predictable by presently available clinical tools. So the methods, any method of predicting suicide that you're going to read about in the medical literature is totally unreliable. And when I went to medical school, they told us as a family practice doctor especially, it was our responsibility to predict these suicides. And you could predict a suicide if a person had mentioned suicide, if they had a plan, if they could tell you how they were going to do it, or when they were going to do it, then that was a sure ringer that you knew that person was going to commit suicide. And and the action you should take, of course, was to institute some type of suicide prevention, activate a suicide prevention program if there was one in your physical area, or to alert the person's family so the family could take away all tools or anything he might be able to use to commit suicide, which is kind of outrageous because the main method of suicide is hanging, and almost any guy can get his hand on a tie or a belt, or medication overdose for women. And women, you know, I mean, as a doctor, you just prescribe antidepressants for the person, for Christ's sake. And, of course, handguns. Those three methods of suicide account for over 65% of all suicides. So all of the methods they trained us doctors to look for in terms of predicting suicide were totally ineffective.
That is pretty interesting. Now, are those types of predictions very accurate or not accurate at all? Or
well, the types of predictions that doctors are being given in terms of predicting suicide are totally inaccurate. For example, doctors are told, well, if there's a gun in the house, there's more likelihood of suicide. Possibly, but most houses that have guns don't have a suicide occurring in them. So in other words, if the person has a gun, it doesn't mean they're going to commit suicide. But if they commit suicide, chances are 50% that they had a gun. So one does not predict the other. So you can go backwards in terms of looking back and say, oh, yeah, the person had a gun in the house. Or even worse, you had access to a gun. Maybe they knew a friend had a gun. They would go to that person's house and use their gun or something like that. So having access to a gun is not a good predictor. But if a person's died of suicide, you can guess, 50% accurate, that they probably had access to a gun. So those methods are not very good. So there is another way to look at this. And one way to look at it is you can look at suicide as an illness, but one whose cause is not limited to depressed people. The reason I say this is because the frequency of suicide in depressed and non-depressed people is pretty close to the same. Not that much difference between 1.5% death rate and a 2% death rate. So there is a risk of suicide. It is rising, but does not appear to be associated with depression. And so that might be the reason why doctors are missing a lot of the suicides and why we really aren't preventing them very well. It's because we're not taking a more open-minded view of the causes of suicide.
Okay, now can you give an example of this?
Yeah, studies have shown that 95% of suicides are due to relationship problems, money problems, job problems, gambling and drugs. And depression was never mentioned in the study. So in other words, people having ordinary life crises have a suicidal response instead of a life-sustaining response. And they apply a permanent solution to what's a temporary problem. And so one example of this is actually a patient I saw in my practice. And she was a new patient. She came in, and I said, well, Ms. Jones, what's happening today? She says, well, you know, I don't know. I think I'm depressed. I'm crying all the time. The phone rings. I cry. Someone knocks on the door. I cry. I'm thinking of maybe killing myself. And I don't know. I've got the best house in the whole wide world. I'm living in my dream house, married to my dream husband. I have two wonderful dream kids, and life has never been better. We've got all the money we want, and I'm crying all the time. I want to kill myself. And so I just leapt out of my mouth. I said, oh, my God, you must be on drugs. Since she had a sense of humor, she laughed along with me. So she said, well, I don't use any of those illegal drugs. I said, well, what about some legal ones? She says, well, you know, I've taken this blood pressure medicine. I said, oh, really? She said, yeah, in fact, my blood pressure specialist referred me to you. He said, since I live in this part of town, I might as well go see you. My practice was in the middle of the ghetto. It's a very, very, very bad part of town. And so it was like almost an insult. The doctor said that to her that way. Well, you live over there. That's all right. I got to go see that doctor. So I said, well, tell me exactly what happened. He says, well, I have high blood pressure, and doctor specialist started me on blood pressure medicine. I said, uh-huh, sounds reasonable. And blood pressure medicine wasn't really working. And so he started me a new medicine. And it kind of helped my blood pressure. And then I had got this depression. And he said, well, I don't handle depression. You have to go see a primary care doctor for depression. And maybe your primary care doctor will refer you to a psychiatrist or something. I said, oh, okay. So this new medicine that she just started, it was very new at the time, actually still in the market. I said, well, that's pretty new medicine. But I had a law, all my drug reps, that you may not leave me a sample of any medicine unless you leave me a package insert. I had to make some drug reps go back to their car, dig in their backseat, their trunk, wherever, and spend a lot of time finding a package insert. So I happened to have that same sample in my drug cabinet, and I had, of course, a package insert. And I rolled it out, read the microscopic print, and there it was. Causes mental status changes. What a euphemism. So in other words, put in English, it can mess with your mind. So I said to her, I said, well, I think we have a problem right here. It's this drug. Why don't we just stop this drug and put you on a different drug, and we'll see how it goes. And she came back a week later and said, wow, I feel great. No more crying. I'm not depressed anymore. I have the greatest husband in the world, the greatest house in the world, the greatest kids in the world, and I love it. So that's an example of taking a broader view of depression. Not only depression, but really suicide and suicidal tendencies. So if you take a broader view, then you can often find the cause and be a lot more effective. Whereas in medical school and in residency and even in continuing medical education, when doctors are taught about suicide, we're taught about these social factors and, oh, maybe there's problems with the relationship and there's problems over here and problems over there. But people are people and they always have problems. Suicide enters when the person sees suicide as a solution to their problem. So no matter what phase of life you're at, you know, maybe your car just broke and now you got to go shopping for another car, and that's always stressful because you never know if you're going to get a good one or not, and the other one seemed to work so well. Or, you know, the kids are leaving kindergarten and going to first grade, and how are they going to adjust? But I mean, there's always things in life that are going to be a little challenging. And so the big difference between suicide and not committing suicide is how the person perceives these changes. And this particular patient, this particular kind, she couldn't even think of a good reason to commit suicide. It's just something that she kind of felt like maybe she had to do. And so that's the important thing, is to take a broader view. And the medical kind of anatomy of suicide is that a person just gets a thought in their head, calculates that suicide is a reasonable solution to their problem, and they just act on it. And so there's not, we don't really have in medicine a good model for predicting who's going to act on this and who isn't.
Okay.
But this, yeah.
Okay. Now, were there any therapies based on this model?
Yes. There, in the old model, they, back in 1990, they decided that suicide, even though it was much less of a problem than it was now, was out of hand and needed to be handled and needed to be spotted. And they gave doctors checklists. Right? I was in practice at the time, and I had those checklists to determine what factors this person had, a risk factor for suicide, and to go through this checklist and see if the person had a high likelihood of suicide. The only problem was, once I decided the person had a high likelihood of suicide, there was nothing else for me to do. In other words, I could call the local psych hospital and they'd say, oh, no, we're not admitting people for high suicide risk. That's just not something we do anymore. And then you call the emergency intervention team and they say, oh, well, we only intervene in emergencies after the person has slashed their wrist, and then we can apply direct pressure and help you out with that. And so, you know, there really wasn't anything to do once I had completed the so-called checklist. And, of course, I, you know, gave the family advice according to what I was trying to do, and it was totally unsatisfactory because the family was still stressed. The person was still attempting suicide. No one could go to sleep at night because they had to stay up all night watching this person in case they would try it again. And finally, I just had to let go of that standard model because it created way too much stress stress for me and too much stress for my patients.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, Dr. Daniels, and do a station identification. For those that are just joining us, you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this is Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk for Meritable Medicine. If you have any questions, please call in the 914-338-0695. And today's topic is medical homicide by suicide. Now, Dr. Daniels, what leads some people to decide that suicide is a reasonable solution to, like, a life situation?
Well, the medical guide on this one is that we know drugs are a big contributor. And but the drugs that we're taught, or doctors are taught, even I think private citizens are taught to look at, is like alcohol. But the percent of deaths caused by suicide in the general undepressed population is 1.5%. And the percent of depressed people who die of suicide is only 2%. And so suicide as a cause of death is growing among the non-depressed as well as the depressed. So therefore, only 25% of the deaths among the depressed people can be attributed to depression, or half of this 2%. In other words, you're about as likely to die of suicide as the non-depressed. So we have to look for another cause of suicide. Many studies on alcohol indicate that it clouds judgment and leads many heavy users to attempt and complete suicide. However, if we take a look at the medical conditions associated with suicide, we see that these conditions are treated with medications that have suicide as a side effect.
So you mean the medication prescribed for a common medical condition can cause suicide?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the medications prescribed for depression are even more likely to lead to suicide than drugs prescribed for non-depressive illnesses. And this might be really the key to understanding why the frequency of suicide has just skyrocketed. In one study, 53% of people who committed suicide were taking medications for depression. And could it be that the medications cause the death? In other words, in the normal population, for every 100 suicides, in the depressed population, there are 75 suicides among the non-depressed. So in other words, looking at these suicides, you have 100 suicides among depressed people. 75 of them would have happened if the person had not been depressed. Only 25%, or 25 of these 100, can be attributed to depression. But in this case, we have another anomaly, because 53% of the people who committed suicide were taking medication for depression. So if 53% were taking medications for depression, then that suggests, obviously, that 53% of people, this was not, that the medication was ineffective. So lack of therapy was not a reason for suicide in 53% in this study of the 100 who committed suicide, because they were under treatment for drugs with medications, right? So then you have to take a look. Well, wait a minute. If these medications that treat depression cause suicide, could it be that the medications presently available for the treatment of depression are actually the reason for the skyrocketing frequency we see in depression? And so if you take a look at this, it seems the answer would be absolutely. In 2004, antidepressants did not reduce the risk of suicide. In the Wisconsin Medical Journal study, they found that as of 2004, there was no indication that antidepressants reduced the risk of suicide. Yet, the same antidepressants that were in use in 2004 are now in use, but they're in much wider use, and the frequency of suicide is skyrocketing. Now, back in 2004, they weren't sure if the antidepressants caused suicide, but they're quite sure the antidepressants did not prevent suicide. This is really phenomenal information. So if you're depressed and you take an antidepressant, the reason to take the antidepressant, preventing suicide is not a reason to take antidepressants, because the research is pretty conclusive. They do not prevent suicide. That is an absolute shocker, because you can imagine, as a medical student, we were taught that the only reason someone committed suicide is because they did not start medical therapy soon enough. That is it. And if we could just get every last depressed person to take antidepressants, then suicide would go away. But again, in a Wisconsin Medical Journal study, it's a standard everyday journal, notice alternative stuff, these are written by the doctors for the doctors. They conclude antidepressants absolutely did not reduce the risk of suicide in any way. And then this really impressed upon me when I practiced medicine and, I had depressed patients come in, and even schizophrenic patients. The other thing that the studies are showing is that schizophrenia has a very high risk of suicide, so in schizophrenic. And this is interesting because a schizophrenic is a person who's has a mental disorder, generally characterized by unrealistic thinking and hearing voices and hallucinations. But more to the point, people with schizophrenic are very, very disruptive. And so their families will bring them to the doctor and say, hey, you got to help us with this. And initially, I would send these people to the psychiatrist, and psychiatrists put them on medicines, and they would act even worse, and things would just get even more out of hand. And if I decide, you know what, let's try something else. And you can't get a schizophrenic to take medication anyway, so I just let them alone. They didn't want to take their medicine. And I would change their diet, give them some herbs to help them have more bowel movements, and give them some other herbs to kill parasites, and lo and behold, the voices went away. And so that was my first exposure to the kind of alternative view of mental illness, because I had to do something because it was so disruptive, not only for my patients, but for me. I was getting phone calls after phone call after phone call, and I was just out of drugs. I just was nothing else to prescribe. But let's take a look at some medical conditions that are associated with very high suicide rate. AIDS, for example, has a very high suicide rate, or a higher suicide rate. And it turns out that HIV drugs have suicide as a side effect. One such drug is Isentress. And, this is something we as doctors were taught, oh, my gosh, HIV is such a bad disease. Wouldn't you be depressed, too, if you had it? Of course these people don't commit suicide. But, that sounds about right. But there are conditions my patients have had where I take a look at, man, I think I would do myself in if I had that. And they're just chipper and happy, and they have no problem at all. They just lead otherwise normal lives, and they have families that love them. They have a great life despite this difficult condition. So that's not a reasonable way to determine, if a disease would make someone commit suicide. So AIDS is associated with a higher suicide rate. And seizure disorders are associated with a higher suicide rate. And actually, it's a very high suicide rate illness. And when you take a look at the drugs that cause suicide, Depakote, a seizure medicine, causes suicide. Gabapentin, which is a seizure medicine, causes suicide. Keppra, another seizure medicine, causes suicide. Klonopin causes suicide. Lamictal causes so much suicide, it gets the black triangle, a special symbol here. And it causes suicide in more than 3% and less than 5% of cases. Well, depressed people only commit suicide 2% of the time, and this particular drug has got a suicide frequency twice that of a depressed person. And it's really amazing that these medical conditions have been associated with suicide, but the drugs used to treat these medical conditions have not been associated with suicide. In other words, people haven't made the link, or the medical profession hasn't made the connection between, wait, the seizure disorder is not what's causing a person to be suicidal. It's the drugs they're taking for the seizures. And another thing about seizure disorder, and there may be some listeners who have seizures or have friends or relatives that have seizures, is often they use multiple drug therapy. And so you can imagine when you use two or three drugs together, each drug having suicide as a side effect, you're going to see a dramatic increase in suicides. And cancer is another illness that's associated with suicide. Again, you'd say, oh, my gosh, you know, if I had cancer, I'd probably want to commit suicide too. Oh, it's such a difficult illness. But the truth of the matter is, you know, life is difficult. Life is challenging. But then again, you take a closer look at cancer, and there are many cancer therapies like Intron A, which is an injectable, that cause suicide. And another one is Lupron. Lupron is an injectable medication that's used for prostate cancer, breast cancer, and ovarian cancer. And so a lot of these drugs that are used to treat cancer actually cause the person to be suicidal or commit suicide. And then there's another condition, lupus, which is associated with increased suicide. And a drug, Remicade, which is very popular in terms of using it for lupus, also causes suicide. And multiple sclerosis, another illness associated with suicide. And multiple sclerosis medications, again, are medications that cause suicide. And Huntington's disease, a very rare disease. You'd say, well, this is a pretty rare disease. Why do people go and commit suicide? Well, it turns out that xenazine, a drug commonly used to treat Huntington's disease, causes suicide. And chronic pain is another predictor, I don't say predictor of suicide, but people who have chronic pain commit suicide more often than people who don't. And again, you'd say, oh my gosh, it's a painful life people must have. But Percocet, a drug often prescribed to people with chronic pain, causes suicide. And then, of course, there is disfigurement, but disfigurement is redundant because many people who have, say, multiple sclerosis are disfigured. Or loss of mobility, people who have multiple sclerosis or Huntington's disease or lupus have loss of mobility. So that's kind of overlap. Mental disorders is a real killer. Wellbutrin, Zyprexa, Seroquel, Risperdal, Lyrica, Paxil, Prozac, all of these drugs that we use to treat mental disorder actually cause suicide.
Sounds like there's not been a link made yet between the actual disease and those medications. And I think that might be an important concept there. We're going to take a quick break again. And for those who are just joining us, you're listening to The Blake Radio. And this is Rainbow Soul, Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your own risks for murder by medicines. Also, you can call in if you have any questions at 914-338-0695. Again, that's 914-338-0695. Now, Dr. Daniels, what are some other medications that are associated with suicide?
Well, you know, we talked about some medications that might be pretty obscure, but there's some common everyday medicines like antibiotics that are associated with suicide. Antibiotics like Cipro, and Cipro is a very commonly used antibiotic. Another one is Levaquin that causes suicide. And the shocking thing about these antibiotics are drugs you take once, twice a day for maybe a week, maybe 10 days. So a simple course of the medication, a little brief course of those medications, can lead a person to commit suicide. And these are drugs that are given for just ordinary things like a skin infection or a mild pneumonia or a urinary tract infection. So that's one type of drug. Another one is the Alzheimer drugs like Namenda. These lead people to commit suicide. And again, people are taught that, hey, you know, if a person has dementia, then of course they're more likely to commit suicide. because they're just so depressed at realizing they're losing their mind. But if you take a look at the medications here that are used for Alzheimer's, then you realize that there might be something else at work here, that the medications like Exelon is another one for dementia, these medications might be causing people to simply commit suicide. Well, not might be. We know that they absolutely are. That's why they're on the list of medications that cause suicide. But if your loved one commits suicide and they have one of these conditions, it's a good idea to take a look at their medications. Or before they commit suicide, why not take a look at their medications and see if maybe one of their medications has suicide as a side effect. And, of course, you have to figure out, hey, am I okay with that? Am I okay with the possibility of suicide? Or is there another way, you know, to handle this? And other medications that are very common but cause suicide are for weight loss medicine, for Christ's sake, Meridia. It causes suicide. Now, if someone comes to you for weight loss, obviously they're not suicidal. They're coming to you to lose weight so they can, you know, look better, have a more exciting social life, fit into more beautiful clothes. I mean, this is not a person ready to end it all. I mean, they're losing weight because they want to reach some desirable goal in this lifetime, not in the next. So it's amazing that, you know, just a simple drug for weight loss can get this person who is so looking forward to life to just go end it all. And Accutane, this is a drug that is for acne. And people who want to treat their acne, you know, they're very, you know, they're basically vain. They want to look better. They're not concerned with killing themselves, but, you know, taking a anti-acne medicine like Accutane. And then the Celebrex capsules, these are the arthritis pills that were found to cause heart attacks. We now realize they cause suicide as well. And then Imitrex, in case you have a headache and you want to get rid of it, you can take your Imitrex injection and just, you know, go jump off a bridge. But it's amazing the everyday, ordinary conditions, which are not life-threatening, that are being treated by drugs that cause suicide. And this, I believe, is in large part responsible for the meteor-like rise in suicide. I mean, it took 7 years for the suicide rate to increase 25%, and then only 3 more years for it to increase by 50%. To increase by 30%. So, you know, these are trends that are really rather strong.
That is pretty. Those are pretty powerful. Now, as far as for those who are just listening, let me give a quick station break. You're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risks from murder by medicine. Also, if you have any questions, please call in at 914-338-0695. And today's show is Medical Homicide by Suicide. Dr. Daniels, do you have any stories as far as medications and suicide goes, or?
Well, I think that medications as a cause of suicide can't be overlooked. I was the medical director of a prison, actually a detention center for teenagers, people age 11 to 16. So once you got 16, then that's it. You had to go to the real jail. And the kids would come in, some of them with suicide attempts. We had this one girl who came in with self-mutilation. She would mutilate herself. And I had seen this during my medical training many times, and all the therapies had just been totally useless. Just didn't seem to be anything we could reliably do to or give to someone to get them to stop mutilating themselves. And so I sat down to talk to her and said, hey, you know, you're a pretty girl here, you're making all these marks, and what do you say we, you know, stop your medications and have you drink a little more water, eat fruit instead of Twinkies, and, you know, more vegetables instead of potato chips. She says, oh, okay, I'll give it a try. And she did, and what happened was we stopped her medication. She's on a lot of them. And she did really well. She stopped mutilating herself. She became cheerful and, you know, did very well. So it wasn't until, for me, that I saw the total and complete failure of these psychiatric drugs that I said, hey, I got to do something else. Because as a medical director of the prison, if people will come in on these drugs, and I'd say, you know, the specialists prescribe these drugs, the specialists, they know what they're doing, they've given us a lot of thought, and maybe I should continue these drugs. And so initially I would continue the drugs. Oh, my God. The patients, the inmates acted so awful. They were rude. They would get into fights with each other. They, you know, all kinds of violence. And then they would, you know, attempt suicide. They didn't have much to work with, so there weren't any successes. Finally, I said, you know what? This place is really like a zoo. This is not working. We've got to use something besides drugs. And so I ended up stopping all the drugs in the prison and substituting food instead, changing the diet. And it was absolutely shocking. The inmates, the frequency of violence went down to absolutely zero. We didn't need overtime for the guards. The guards weren't getting injured anymore. You know, the inmates weren't assaulting them. The rule infractions went down to almost zero. And the inmates were even reminding each other of the rules. And, oh, we got to follow the rules. Oh, no, we don't want to do this. Okay, we have to do that. It was amazing. And they were using words like please and thank you. Total transformation. But it all started because I just could not accept going to work. It was my part-time job. Going to work in that kind of really hostile, chaotic, violent environment. Something's got to give here. And so the basic take-home message is that depression is not a predictor of suicide. It absolutely is not. The exponential increase in suicide points to an external cause, such as a cultural practice, a common source outbreak, basically. And the cultural practice that's paralleled this rise in suicide has been the use of these drugs which cause suicide. Many of them are the newer drugs, newer in the past 20 years, and they've been used much more widely. And so what has happened is we've had this grand experiment in early diagnosis of depression, early diagnosis of you name it. And in this case, what has happened is we've been giving these people or diagnosing them early and giving them drugs that are deadly. In this case, deadly in the form of suicide.
Okay, thanks. For those that are listening, you can call in if you have any questions again at 914-338-0695. Now, Daniels, is there any alternative views on this?
Yes, there's a huge alternative view on this. And the alternative view, I mean, the standard view is suicide can be prevented by giving people more drugs. Unfortunately, all the drugs that are traditionally used for people who are depressed and contemplating suicide actually increase suicide. We know for sure they don't decrease it. That has been absolutely proven. So the alternative view on this is let's stop the use of drugs that we know encourage people to commit suicide or result in an increased suicide rate. So simply stop using those drugs. And so if you want to use drugs, then limit drug use to drugs that don't have suicide as a side effect. That is, if you want to get rid of suicide. So that's one view. Another view is, if people are depressed or suicidal, then maybe there's something else that can be done for them besides drugs. Before I say that, though, I'd like to say that we can reasonably attribute, there's 37.7 thousand deaths per year from suicide. We can reasonably attribute at least 17,700 of those deaths to drug use. But, and the reason I say that is because if you go back before drugs were used, the incidence of suicide was far less. So the baseline incidence of suicide was in the area of 20,000 or so. And so now we're at 37,000. So literally, suicide-causing drugs are most likely responsible for somewhere in the area of 17,000 deaths a year. And that's just if you calculate the change in the number of suicides over time. And so the alternative view then is that the drugs are causing suicide. Let's stop the drugs. How are we going to treat the conditions that people are taking these drugs for? People are taking these drugs, I imagine, because they're uncomfortable. They have a condition. They want some relief. And so the alternative view is that the person needs to remove other chemicals from your body that are causing them to want to commit suicide. For example, we've identified prescription drugs as chemicals that cause people to commit suicide. But could it be other chemicals like food preservatives, food dyes, plastic foods, foods that have been so processed that they can't be used nutritionally? This leads to a malfunction in the brain, causing a person to consider suicide as a solution. So that would be the alternative view on suicide.
Okay, now can you give our listeners an example of this?
Yes, when I was in medical practice, I had a patient who attempted suicide twice. And so she had been a long-term patient of mine. She was a wonderful opera singer. And she suffered, I believe, from asthma. And she was taking an inhaler for her asthma. I now know, I didn't know then, that that particular asthma inhaler can increase the risk of suicide. But I didn't know that. And yeah, nobody mentioned it either. So she attempted suicide once by slitting her wrist. And so I was not aware of that, but she went to the psychiatric hospital. They admitted her for 2 days, started her on medication, sent her home. And then she attempted suicide again, this time by overdosing on her medications. They admitted her to the psychiatric hospital and then sent her home again. And she lived in Syracuse, but her family lived in New York City. And so I guess somehow her family was informed that things weren't going well, or she must have called her family, so you know, I just need a little bit of help. And so the family, which would be her mother and a couple of siblings, came to Syracuse with the plan to pack up all of her belongings and take her back to New York City with them and put her in their custody under their supervision. And so they got to Syracuse, and she said, no, it's not what I want to do. I said, what? We came here to save you, to rescue you. What do you mean you don't want our help? No, I do want your help. That's not what I want you to do. I want you to take me to Dr. Daniel's office, and she'll take care of this. I know she will. And the family was just, they were appalled. They were shocked. And I said, well, where's Dr. Daniel's office? And, of course, it was in the middle of the ghetto, and this was a Caucasian patient and a Caucasian family. They're like, you want us to drive there? She said, yes, I want you. I really want you to take me there, and I know this is going to work out. Dr. Daniel, she'll know what to do. And so the family was really, really upset. And they finally negotiated that this would be one last indulgence that they would give her before they packed her off to New York City. And so I didn't realize everything that preceded this visit. So I pick up her chart, go to the lobby, and say, oh, so-and-so, come on in. I see this, these people surrounding her, just glaring at me with incredible anger. I'm like, oh my gosh, something's not right. I said, well, does your family want to come in with you? She says, no. So she tells me a lot of suicide attempts, and I said, you know what I think we need to do? I think we need to put you on a juice fast for 3 days and you need to do some enemas and you need to take these herbs here, help clean you out and whatever. He says, well, okay. And so she went home, and she and her family was very upset. But she begged them to please give her just 3 days, and if she didn't turn them around in 3 days, she'd go to New York with them. So at the end of 3 days, she came back to the office. I said, well, how's it going? She says, I feel great. I feel wonderful. She says, I'm like, I must have been crazy to think of killing myself. So she totally had a change of mind. She said, I can't even imagine killing myself. And so her family went home in a huff. And to this day, she's an opera singer doing well.
That is great. Now, those who are listening, you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this is Rainbow Soul, healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk for murder by medicine. Also, we have a couple of minutes left that you can call in to ask Dr. Daniels a question at 914-338-0695. Now, how can our listeners defend themselves against this explosive growth of in the suicide rate?
First of all, definitely take a look at a non-drug solution to whatever your problem is, because a lot of these drugs that cause suicide, the doctor is not informed that they cause suicide. So the doctor's going to be prescribing something for you that causes suicide, but he's not going to know because they're not going to tell him. Like in that package insert, it didn't say this blood pressure medicine causes suicide. No, it said this medicine can cause mental and emotional changes. So then I had to take the next leap, which is, oh, my patient has experienced a mental and emotional change. Maybe her depression and thoughts of suicide are from this drug. So the doctors are not going to get these drugs labeled this explicitly where it says suicide risk here. So number one is avoid drug use. The next thing, which you've probably heard many times about, never, ever, ever use a newly released drug. So you want to wait at least 3 years, the drug's been on the market, and that way if it has a suicide record, you'll be able to find a suicide record, unfortunately not from your doctor, but either from Googling the medication on the Internet to see if it's ever caused suicide or if someone on the Internet has complained about it causing suicide, or there's a very special edition of the PDR called Drug Interactions and Side Effects. Your doctor probably doesn't have that book because it's not distributed to doctors free of charge. Doctors have to go out of their way to find it. They have to pay close to $100 for it, and that is the book that lists the side effects of a drug that occur after the drug is released on the market. And so first thing is avoid drugs. Second thing, don't take any drug that's been out there less than 3 years. Third thing is once the drug is at least 3 years old, you have to go look for that drug's record of suicide because the doctor will not, most likely not have the information. And that information may or may not be on the Internet, but it will be most likely in this special book called the PDR, Drug Side Effects and Indications. And so the number one thing is to not use drugs. And also, visit my site, vitalitycapsules.com/find out, and, take this short 3-question quiz. And if you are at risk of murder by medicine, then, get in touch with us and, see if we can put together a plan for you.
Now, what can they do for their loved ones?
Well, if you have a person who is depressed, who's not feeling well, who is feeling maybe suicidal, first thing to do is take a look at the chemicals in their life. The first place to look is their prescription drugs. And really, go with them to the doctor and say, hey, we need to put this person on drugs that don't cause depression, sadness, or suicide. And, get those medications changed. That's the first thing. Next thing is to get the chemicals out of their food. And the third thing is they can go to vitalitycapsules.com and actually have a cookbook there with recipes that have, you know, chemical-free ingredients that actually taste pretty good. And they can heal themselves with food.
Thank you very much, Doctor. That was some very useful information. Now, what do we have for our listeners next week?
Next week, for our listeners, we have the trials and tribulations of psoriasis. So we're going to take a look at psoriasis.
That would be a very interesting topic. Now, for those that are tuning in now, you're listening to the Blake Radio, and this is Rainbow Soul with Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit Dr. Daniels at vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find your risk of murder case. Sorry about that, risk of murder by medication. Also, please tune in next Tuesday at 6 p.m. for another session with Dr. Daniels.
Okay, great. Well, I guess it's time for some music, huh?